Welcome to the Coming Home Well podcast, the show that educates, supports, and advocates for the veteran community. Your host, Dr. Tyler Piron, U.S. Army retired, will bring you exciting conversations with amazing guests about resources, research, and military history, all geared to helping our warriors to come home well. Here's your host, Dr. Tyler Piron.
Welcome back to Coming Home Well. I'm your host, Tyler Piron, and today we have a repeat guest. This doesn't happen very often, so I'm actually very excited. We have Colonel Tom Buzz Remfer. The last time we spoke was in 2018. He was a lieutenant colonel then. He's a colonel now. Apparently, he was promoted in retirement. Tom's going to have to fill us in on how that worked as well, and he is with Hoping for Justice. Now, the website is super easy to get to. Hoping, like I hope for something, the number 4, justice.org. Great organization, and it's a huge issue that so many veterans over the many decades have been dealing with. And you're probably like, Tyler, what in the world is this issue? It's anthrax vaccinations, and now COVID 19 vaccinations. A lot of challenges there. I don't want to give it all away for free at the beginning. Welcome to the show, Colonel Remfer, and thank you so much for joining us on Coming Home Well.
Thank you, Tyler. It's good to be back. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity to update you.
Yeah, it's been a while. We've been to like 5 years, I guess maybe 6 now, if I'm not great at math, but and I try not to do it in public, but it's been a while. Last time we spoke, the COVID-19 vaccine and the COVID-19 pandemic wasn't even a thing. So we had talked about anthrax. And just to fill in our listeners and sort of explain what that issue is and what Hoping for Justice is all about, can you just give me the 20,000-foot overview?
Sure. The anthrax vaccine use on the military occurred during the first Gulf War. And then they ended up mandating it almost 10 years later on the entire military force. There was a lot of concern based on the experience with the Gulf War and a lot of soldiers getting sick and a lot of reputable entities believing that anthrax vaccine was the primary cause of Gulf War illness. And so there was a lot of resistance to the anthrax vaccine mandate in the 1997-1998 timeframe. And ultimately, the Department of Defense was ordered by the federal courts to stop the program. There was an injunction, preliminary injunction, followed by a permanent injunction, and they halted the program. And the federal judge said, you can't treat our troops like guinea pigs. That's what the rulings say. And as you mentioned, my website, hopingforjustice.org, using the number 4, don't write out 4, hopingforjustice.org, or another website redirects there, unyielding.org. So you can find all of the rulings on that website for the 1,000 or so soldiers that were punished over the anthrax vaccine and anthrax vaccine refusals during the time frame that the program was illegal, according to the courts. And the ultimate ruling said that it was not substantially justified, and the military and the government ended up paying our lawyers. So they lost. It was a win for the troops, and people have gotten their records corrected. That's good. The military should have the honor, the courage, the humility to correct everyone's records unilaterally. But instead, what they do is they make you apply. And so for soldiers that have less than fully honorable discharges, they can get their records corrected by applying to the Military Board for Correction of Military Records. The form is on the website. The process is painful, but you don't need an attorney. You can just simply fill out a DD Form 149 and explain your service experience, show your discharge that might have been less than fully honorable, and ask to have it upgraded to fully honorable. And it's a very short form and should be a very simple case to have discharges upgraded. Members that have done it have been mostly successful in getting their records upgraded. And so I encourage everybody to do that. That's kind of where we were in 2018 when we were talking about it. We were essentially saying that there's a process for people to get their records corrected. After that time frame, indeed, a couple different Marines successfully got their records fully upgraded. They'd had bad conduct discharges. They got their
Means they were court-martialed. Like, they probably went to jail, right? Yeah.
Absolutely. They actually went to jail over anthrax vaccine refusal. And the military put them in confinement. They were fined, they were demoted, and they were received less than honorable discharges, bad conduct discharges. Those discharges were upgraded to fully honorable. The Marines received good conduct medals. They received their back VA benefits. And, you know, bottom line is it's a success story. Unfortunately, it's not the proactive, courageous leadership that should be occurring where the military leaders go ahead and say, hey, anybody that was involved in this program and these punishments should have their records corrected. President Trump actually had directed the Department of Defense, and the Department of Defense put out a memorandum that said that if there have been any injustices, errors, or inequities, people can have their records corrected. That was the basis for the review. Because as you can imagine, we're 20
years. Right, they already had that option, right?
Well, they had that option, but it's been so many years. Now, normally the corrections boards allow for a waiver to the three-year statute of limitations based on the, in the interest of justice. They normally allow waivers to that statute of limitations, but we're talking 20 plus years later. So,
right.
The Secretary of Defense level memorandum to review people's records gave them the basis to have the review. And that's how these Marines got their records reviewed. So that memorandum's also on the website, hopingforjustice.org. And so the bottom line is we have been successful since we had the last interview in getting some folks' records corrected. That's all very positive. Also, subsequent to the interview, there was a national biodefense strategy that came out that ended up adopting, mirroring four major tenets of my Naval Postgraduate School thesis, which recommended a biodefense strategy, such as was actually put out 10 years later. We can talk about that. And there's been a great deal of similar issues that have occurred with respect to the pandemic. And so As we continue the interview, I'd like to discuss some of the genesis of the, you know, bio incident that related to anthrax, the anthrax letter attacks, how that almost derailed our efforts to have the anthrax vaccine program reviewed, but ultimately some soldiers did get their records corrected, so that's a positive. But I'll talk about those parallels, and then I'll talk about the parallels also with respect to the laws that went into effect after we got the anthrax vaccine program declared illegal. They came up with new laws because, you know, once the anthrax vaccine program was declared illegal, it basically was an unapproved medical product. And the FDA was ordered to license it properly. And that was our whole point was, you know, not only is it not licensed properly for what you're using it for, inhalation anthrax, but it's actually not been licensed by the Food and Drug Administration at all, even though they were required to decades earlier, they were required to formalize the license, and they never did it. It was an unlicensed medical product being used for an investigational or experimental purpose.
Hundreds of thousands of people.
Yeah, it in no uncertain terms, both in the first Gulf War, as well as during the anthrax mandate 10 years later, which was all 20 years ago, it was an unapproved medical product. So the Department of Defense, the Food and Drug Administration, Department of Health and Human Services, you know, kind of had a quandary. How do we use a drug product that is unapproved? And so they came up with a new law called the Emergency Use Authorization under the PREP Act. The PREP Act is the Public Readiness and Emergency Response Law. And so essentially what they did right after the anthrax vaccine program was declared illegal is they came up with this new law that gave the government and the Department of Defense the ability to use an unapproved medical product on the troops and potentially on civilians. But there was a really interesting Federal Register insert that went in, was published in the Federal Register by the government. And it was basically the agreement with the court where they said, hey, we're going to be allowed under emergency use authorization to use anthrax vaccine, but it has to be absolutely voluntarily. And the Federal Register entry is on the website. And there's actually a COVID tab because it's so relevant to what happened during COVID. So all the way on the right-hand side on the website, either unyielding or hopingforjustice.org, there's a COVID tab. And in that COVID tab, there is a link to the Federal Register. And the Federal Register insertion in 2005, coincident with the PREP Act and the very first ever emergency use authorized drug product was anthrax vaccine. And they said, no penalty. You can refuse it. It's got to be absolutely optional. There will be no loss of benefits. There'll be no loss of entitlements. And soldiers can still deploy, even if they don't take it. You can't use, you know, all these coercive means of keeping troops from doing their jobs if they don't take this.
Or putting them in jail.
Right. So during anthrax vaccine, they're kicking guys out, giving them bad conduct discharges. They're throwing them in jail. That all should have been corrected once the court said that the program was patently illegal. The manual for court martial says that an order instituted that is patently illegal does not enjoy an inference of legality, which is what the chain of command tried to imply for years and years until they were shot down by the federal courts. And then it applies to COVID too, because they tried the same, you know, malarkey about an inference of legality. And they made sure that they never got any successful judicial review of the program. By this time, during COVID, they didn't actually use the Uniform Code of Military Justice in order to court-martial people because they knew what they were doing was a patently illegal order. And so they wanted to make sure that nobody had any judicial review for court-martials. And so they just didn't court-martial anybody. They court-martialed one soldier related to mask mandates, and they basically deferred on prosecuting him on his COVID vaccine refusal, most likely because, you know, more likely than not, they knew it was patently illegal and they didn't want to have the court martial process. They didn't want to allow there to be future judicial review as occurred with anthrax vaccine. So anyway, the interesting intersection from anthrax vaccine to COVID vaccine is that anthrax was the first ever EUA. The EUAs allowed them to use an emergency use product, but it had to be optional. It had to be voluntary. And so it's interesting when you look at the 2021 timeframe after the vaccines first came out for the first half of 2021, the military had the program be voluntary because they knew it was emergency use authorized. And they knew that Federal Register precedent said you could not mandate EUA products. So they were following the law. I was actually very proud of the Department of Defense for not jumping the gun and mandating COVID vaccine until there was an actual FDA-approved product that was fielded and was available to the troops. So in August of 2021, coincident with the disastrous events related to the Afghanistan pullout, it's almost like they wanted to change the subject. And they went ahead and announced a vaccine approval for COVID vaccine for the Pfizer. And they said, it's approved. And oh, by the way, now we're going to go ahead and start mandating it. But what they didn't tell you is that they reissued literally within a day of the quote unquote on paper FDA approval, they reissued the emergency use authorization. And in the reissued emergency use authorization, it says that they're only going to use EUA product, that they don't actually have FDA product because they have so much EUA product, they're just going to use that up. And they make very clear in the reissued EUA that the products are legally distinct. And that's because one is produced under EUA standards and one that was ended up never being produced was under FDA regulatory standards for an approved product. And so they can't be intermixed. You can't take a EUA product and suddenly wave a wand and say, okay, now we're going to relabel all this stuff as FDA approved.
And so it wasn't exactly the same drug. It was, hey, we have this. It's mostly the same. This new product is totally FDA approved, but we bought so much of the old stuff that, you know what, we're just going to use that up, but we're going to say it's approved, even though it's a different thing.
Right. And that's not legal. And they know it's not legal. Right. So
yeah, it sounds pretty shitty.
Yeah, you can't take a 2021 vehicle and suddenly slap a new, you know, title on it and say, hey, now it's a 2021 vehicle. It just doesn't work that way. And so it makes common sense that you cannot suddenly take something that is EUA, emergency use authorized, and suddenly say it's FDA approved. And so the test of this is, after the quote unquote FDA approval, what was given? Only emergency use authorized products. So for months and months, years after the FDA approval was announced and after the mandates were instituted based on the FDA approval, everything they gave Americans in the United States of America, everything at the pharmacies, at every CVS and Walmart pharmacy, it all still said emergency use authorized. Therefore, it had to be optional. And for the military as well, they tried to do some hocus pocus and imply that there were some FDA approved product that were provided at some point later on after all of the mandate deadlines. So it's all kind of not applicable from the perspective of the actual mandate. The bottom line is only emergency use authorized product that had to be optional was the only thing provided. And so the program was a disaster. They ended up punishing almost 8,000 people in the form of forced discharges. They forced these kids out. 1,000 plus people were forced out. Whereas during the anthrax,
they weren't court-martialing them, were they? They were just like administrative discharge.
Yeah, and it's because, Tyler, it's because they knew that what they were doing would not withstand legal scrutiny. So they wanted to avoid that kind of judicial review. And instead, what they did was they basically coerced people. If you're not going to take it, you need to leave. And even though the Congress said that people had to be given honorable discharges, they pulled some more hocus pocus and they basically gave them general under honorable conditions. So they played loose with the law. Congress evidently looked the other way and allowed them to give these kids general discharges under honorable conditions. Bottom line is they didn't give them fully honorable discharges, and that impacted their earned GI Bill benefits. Mm-hmm. And so today we have 8,000 plus service members at a minimum that have been forced out and lost their educational benefits, and they need to have their records corrected, no different than those thousands or so service members from the anthrax vaccine era that the Department of Defense never had the courage to stand up and actually say, hey, we're going to correct these kids' records. And so the immensity of it is pretty significant with COVID compared to anthrax vaccine, but the fundamentals are the same. The Department of Defense broke the law, patently illegal program. Some people are kind of shy about saying it's illegal. With anthrax vaccine, it was proven illegal by the federal courts. With COVID vaccine, no federal court has actually said it was patently illegal like happened with anthrax vaccine.
And not yet, anyway.
And the Congress did them an enormous favor by actually stopping the mandate. And so the Department of Defense, you know, kind of put on a good show saying, you know, we believe in this vaccine program and we don't think it should be stopped. But I think they welcomed it being stopped because they had all these cases that would have proven it to be patently illegal, just like anthrax vaccine. So because there wasn't a federal court ruling that said it was illegal, and because the Congress, in an unprecedented legislative move with the 2023 National Defense Authorization Act, stopping the mandate, the administration ended up, the executive branch, moved to the courts and said, hey, you need to dismiss all these federal lawsuits that are challenging the legality of the program. And you need to moot and vacate all these rulings that said the program was illegal. And it was illegal for a variety of grounds. It was illegal because they were messing with religious rights. It was illegal because they weren't allowing religious exemptions or medical exemptions. It was illegal because they were mandating an EUA product in direct violation of 10 USC 1107A, which says soldiers have to be given their prior consent rights. And so this did the Department of Defense an enormous favor by stopping the program. And then ultimately the Supreme Court ruled that they needed to vacate all the lower court cases. That rubs people wrong because they feel like those cases shouldn't be vacated, that they should be precedential. And unfortunately they're not. But it's not like they removed the rulings and said that what this court decided no longer exists. They can't evaporate that. Can it be cited as precedent? Evidently not. Can the cases be brought again if they ever tried to do another mandate with an emergency use authorized product? So
they're trying to do the sleight of hand, the three-card Monty. Hey, yeah, we did it, but now we stopped it because Congress said so, and therefore all the crap that we were doing doesn't count.
Yeah, everything about this program has been deceptive and fundamentally dishonest from the very beginning. The idea that there was an FDA approval, but they never provided the FDA approved product to the troops, absolutely deceptive and dishonorable. The Secretary of Defense put out a directive for the mandate that specifically said that soldiers would only be given fully FDA-approved product. It never happened. So even for the folks that are shy about saying that it was illegal, it was in violation of the SecDef directive. The SecDef himself should say, hey, listen, unbeknownst to me, I thought the troops would be able to get FDA-approved product. We jumped the gun, and we never should have forced those troops out that were never offered FDA-approved product. That would be the honorable, humble, just, courageous thing to do. I'm still hopeful that that will happen. If it doesn't happen with the current administration, it will hopefully happen with the next administration, because it was just so in your face, absolutely illegal. And even if you don't want to say that it was illegal because there's no federal court ruling that says it was illegal, well, just look at the SecDef directive. It said that they were supposed to have FDA-approved product. That didn't happen. Congress shut the program down. We should have the humility and courage as Americans, as American leaders, our executives, our lawmakers. They should all have the courage to go back now and say, this really didn't make sense. It made so little sense that the Congress actually stopped the program. It probably makes sense to do the right things for those 8,000 troops that ended up getting less than fully honorable discharges. And then, you know, they can go much further, which they should. They should offer those folks their jobs back. They should make sure that anybody that stayed in, because there was a lot of timing involved. I mean, there were a lot of refusers that were still in beyond the 8,000. And those people have probably had their careers hampered long-term significantly. Protection should be put in place for them as well. Unilateral corrections, not making people apply to the correction board for military records. Those troops, those courageous and unyielding Marines that persistently worked their cases for so many years to get their anthrax vaccine discharges fully upgraded, get their good conduct medals. Those guys' cases took like 15 years. That is totally unacceptable.
Ridiculous.
It's just completely unacceptable. Our troops should not have to wait that long for redress of their grievances. It goes to fundamental, you know, constitutional prerequisites that not only do we have a right to redress of grievances, but we should have prompt adjudication of our grievances. 15 years, 20 years, I had a correction of military records case myself where I was a lieutenant colonel, and I'm grateful to the Department of Defense not only for every experience that I had in the military, for all of the opportunities to express my professional dissent over the years and be able to stay in. And they even ended up promoting me to full colonel. That case took 10 years. And it's unacceptable because during those many years for most litigants or applicants, you know, they'll tend to get tired and go away, and the Department of Defense ends up, you know, kind of tiring people out. And that's not an acceptable modus operandi for the way justice should be working, for the way the corrections boards should be working. It shouldn't be, hey, the guy that's still standing 10 or 15 years later, hey, we'll throw him a bone and we'll fix it. They've waited so long with respect to anthrax vaccine corrections that, you know, for all practical purposes, it's beyond all statute of limitations. Nobody can really get any back pay, get any back rank at this point, but they can have their discharges upgraded. The paper can be fixed. And if that ends up giving them GI Bill benefits, then that's good because they earned those. Those were earned benefits. And the Department of Defense, Department of Veteran Affairs never should have denied those benefits from those troops. And so that would be my hope, is that not only for COVID vaccine refusals, but also for anthrax vaccine refusals, is that the Congress does something courageous. And, you know, not only did they take that courageous step and actually stop the Department of Defense from implementing a patently illegal vaccine mandate, but the judiciary stopped the anthrax vaccine patently illegal mandate. Take all of this history and put together some legislation. You know, either the legislature can do it, you know, or the executive can do it. You know, either branch of government can go ahead and just fix this once and for all anthrax vaccine punished folks and for all COVID vaccine punished folks, fix it for all of them unilaterally. And, you know, maybe it'll actually make our future recruits trust the Department of Defense, because they witness that very important moral character of humility and courage to admit when one is wrong. And the Department of Defense should do it unilaterally, but if they don't, the Congress should legislate it or the executive should direct it. It could happen with a stroke of a pen. The President of the United States, current or a future President of the United States, with an executive order, can order the Department of Defense to fix this properly. You know, and
that's really what we've been waiting on, because right now the current path to fix somebody, either anthrax or COVID-19, being forced to take it with the emergency use authorization and all those illegality, right now the only way to fix it is to go to the Board for Correction of Military Records and say, hey, these are all the reasons, individually, one at a time, individually, as opposed to like proactively, that person has to go and say, hey, my case is this, one at a time, spend all the time, money, and effort to get those records updated. And they have to sort of prove it, but that's pretty easy because of all the information. But they're also an extremely slow and very different path than, hey, we screwed up, we made a mistake, or we did it wrong. I use mistake in air quotes, because they knew what they were doing. It's not like they don't have lawyers everywhere going, hey, you really shouldn't be doing this. But fixing it is either legislative or administrative, a pardon or a fix or a direction, whether it's a SecDef or the president or Congress. That's really what needs to happen, right?
Yes. And I've provided on the website an actual draft bill that it's difficult to get any traction with this stuff in the Congress, because unfortunately, the Congress is illegality shy. They've tried to say that they don't want to really address correctional military records. Let the Department of Defense handle that themselves. Problem is, it's just such a lengthy process, and it requires every individual soldier to apply. That's just not fair. It's the Department of Defense that broke the law. It's the Department of Defense that explicitly violated the SecDef directive. That's also on the website. So the Department of Defense should fix it for everybody. But if the Department of Defense doesn't fix it, then there's a draft bill for Congress to fix it, hopefully for both eras, both the COVID vaccine recently punished and disenfranchised, you know, a group of people, but also for the anthrax vaccine cohort, because there's 1,000 or so people that are all, you know, it's 20 years later. And I think that they would be very grateful of their government and of their military or of their Congress to get a notification that your discharge, general discharge from 20 plus years ago, has been upgraded to fully honorable. Please contact the Veteran Affairs for, you know, initiation of your earned GI Bill benefits if you want to pursue any kind of educational opportunities that you earned. And so they can do it. It literally costs nothing, because all of these GI Bill benefits were already funded across the years by the Congress. And so,
and these people earned them. They just got screwed because of this hanky panky.
That's right. And so the Department of Defense should go the extra mile. They should invite these young people to come back into military service. I think that is probably, unfortunately, it's a hurdle too high for the current military leadership. Hopefully, future military leaders that are appointed into the highest levels positions will have the courage and humility to do the right thing. Military is really good about talking about these kinds of ethical decisions and choices and decisions, matrices. But unfortunately, when it comes to their practical application, sometimes they have to be ordered to do the right thing.
Oh, absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about the COVID-19 path, because you and I were talking and I thought it was optional for the majority of it, but then that sort of changed. So that pathway of, you know, hey, it's optional, like it's like the flu shot, you know, kind of a thing. But I guess it is mandatory now for the flu shot. But let's talk about that pathway, because I was under the misunderstanding that it was optional. But apparently it wasn't for the whole time. So how did that work?
Yeah, so after the initial FDA emergency use authorization in approximately the December 2020 timeframe, they ended up having the emergency use authorization and they rolled the products out. And for about the first half of the year, maybe 7-8 months, it was optional. And the Department of Defense judiciously made sure that they didn't mandate it on the troops. And then when the fraudulent FDA approval occurred, I mean, you know, they put out an FDA approval, but they put out no FDA approved product. I don't know what you call that other than a, you know, basically a gargantuan fraud on the American troops and the American people. So after August of 2021, when they came out with the gargantuan fraud of the FDA approval, and then the next day reissued the emergency use authorization and reiterated that the products were legally distinct, but then went ahead and not only did mandates on the military, but did mandates on federal employees, federal contractor, large businesses, medical providers. And so they had all these mandates suddenly because there was this mirage, this ruse of there being an FDA-approved product. And they instituted mandates over the course of the next year, year and a half. The mandates ended up getting uniformly rejected by the courts. Supreme Court ended up ruling that the OSHA mandate for large employers was illegal. A variety of federal courts ruled that the other mandates were also illegal, whether it was on religious grounds, 10th Amendment grounds, Procurement Act grounds, a variety of different legal justifications. The mandates were uniformly shot down. And so ultimately, the Supreme Court only ruled on the large employer mandate, but ultimately the federal government ended up rescinding all the mandates and even rescinded the public health emergency. And so ultimately, the mandates did not go well. What I thought was interesting is that the government's conduct, the Department of Defense's conduct pre-gargantuan fraud FDA approval ruse was that they were voluntary, signaled that the government knew that they could not mandate EUA products. But in the summer of 2021 timeframe, just prior to the mandates, they solicited an opinion from an unknown Department of Justice employee who basically wrote them a legal fig leaf that said, yeah, you can go ahead and do mandates because in that emergency use authorization law where it says people have the option to accept or refuse, there's also the word consequences. It says that people may have to deal with the consequences of that refusal. And so they twisted it around and did a misinterpretation of the law.
The consequences were like you might get sick.
Yeah, consequences.
Not get fired or go to jail.
Exactly. Consequences had nothing to do with job loss. Consequences had nothing to do with being able to impose mandates. Consequences had to do with medical choice. Consequences had to do with the exact same language, which is in the Federal Register for the DOD program in 2005 being voluntary only. It also has that word consequences in it. And they go on to say absolutely voluntary, no penalty, no loss of entitlement, no loss of benefits. And it's because the consequences language in the emergency use authorization law, and it specifically the code is 21 USC 360 BBB-3. It's also on the website. The language actually comes from 21 CFR 50.25, which is a code of federal regulations which relates to protection of human subjects and informed consent. So the language, the context of having consequences out there in the legal world and in the law, in the Federal Register, it's because it's supposed to be optional, option to accept or refuse. The precedent is the DUD first ever EUA in the Federal Register. The contextual justification is 21 CFR 50.25, the protection of human subjects. And the Title 21 law that I cited, 360BBB-3, has the same language and was misinterpreted by the Department of Justice in order to get green light for the administration, the launching of mandates. It was
Protection of human subjects is the entire basis of doing research. Any researcher will tell you that anything involving humans involves all sorts of protections so that people are informed about the potential risks, but also that they can quit at any time. Yeah. Like, you're like, oh, I don't want to do this. That's the whole point of, you know, voluntary and knowing consent. If you're forcing people to do it by losing their job or going to jail or getting fired or any of these things, that's coercive by its very nature.
Yeah, and it's not a good look for the government. And that's why they backed off of the mandates. That's why they've tried to get all the court cases dismissed. And, you know, ultimately, the government should not be doing nationwide mandates on the population based on essentially such legally weak foundations, misinterpretations by one DOJ official. They got their legal fig leaf and they went and imposed mandates on the entire American population. And Tyler, this isn't even to start discussing the safety and efficacy of the drug product. I mean,
right.
We know now, you know, 3-4 years later, we know that safety is seriously in question. We know efficacy or lack thereof is not even in question. The drug isn't even efficacious. Does not stop transmission, does not stop infection. The fundamental, you know, basis of putting these mandates out there to begin with was the idea that it might be safe and effective. A matter of fact, the legal standard for safe and effective under the EUA law is reasonably safe. And one thing I want to point out is an additional very disturbing trend that's occurred over the course of the past 100 years. So over 100 years ago, they started coming up with drug laws. They wanted to make sure that they had safe drugs on the market, safe products. And over the years, they included efficacy standards, make sure that drugs, not only were they safe, but they're actually effective.
And yeah, they work. They do the thing that you're taking it to do.
Yeah. And so there were all kinds of echelons of amendments to the drug laws and the Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act over the year that required drugs to be safe and effective. And it all changed basically with the advent of the anthrax letter attacks. And they wanted to get a drug product out there that was unapproved. But they knew that they had a problem because it technically, you know, wasn't approved. And so they wanted to have a new standard of something called reasonably safe and effective. And so we actually unwound 100 years of FDA government drug law history where they were constantly making sure that drugs were safer and safer, more effective and more effective. And the law supported that. And then they unwound it all with the emergency use authorization law. And it would be one thing if they actually kept it voluntary and gave people their proper informed consent notifications that, hey, this drug is new. We don't know if it's safe. We don't know if it's effective. We think it is. We think it's reasonably safe and effective. But they just didn't know. But they didn't do any of that. Not only did they unwind the legal requirements of safety and efficacy, which used to be the preamble of the Food and Drug Administration, that it could not be understated the importance of safe and effective drugs. You can't even find that preamble on the FDA website anymore. Now the preamble of the FDA seems to be, we're going to just allow anything that we can contend is reasonably safe or effective to be distributed. And if necessary, we'll do an emergency declaration and emergency use authorization to make sure that the pharmaceutical companies are able to deliver that product and then not warn the American people about the risks. So in addition to the Congress and the executive, you know, current or future, needing to make sure that they get a grip on this, they need to go back and look at the history, not only how anthrax vaccine weaves in and is the intersection for the EUA law, but also just how drug laws themselves have basically been diluted and adulterated in the last 20 years. And it's unacceptable. It defies the preamble of the FDA to ensure safe and effective drug products for the American people. And, you know, so at this point, I think it's going to be interesting where we go in the future. I'm hopeful that we have courageous elected leaders in the future or current ones that step up and make sure that they correct the wrongs. It's so simple. It's literally zero cost. When they correct things, they don't have to make any admission. Even when they corrected things for our courageous, persistent, and unyielding Marines 5 or so years ago, they did it based on clemency. They didn't admit, the government didn't admit that they were wrong. They just did the right thing. They gave these guys fully honorable discharges, reinstated their benefits, reinstated their rank. They took away their demotions, gave them back pay for the lost pay for the time that they were still wearing the rank but had been demoted. Gave them good conduct medals. You know, most of these things are literally zero cost, but yep. The benefit to the impression of the American people about the courageousness and the trustworthiness of our government, that they actually have the courage to do the right thing, despite the, you know, bad political look, you know, we're suffering a unprecedented recruiting and retention problem in the military. And it's only going to continue until our military, our national leaders turn this thing around and show the American people, show the moms and dads of the United States of America that we can trust giving our sons and daughters to the armed forces, that we're going to have leaders that stand up for them, are stewards of their rights, rather than falling over and looking the other way and allowing troops to be treated like guinea pigs, as the federal judge wrote in 2003.
Absolutely. So I'm just sort of wrapping my head around this because I wasn't aware of the COVID-19 vaccine being as mandatory and this long history. But there are some parallels to the anthrax and the COVID-19 where they're both mandated and the manufacturers are totally exempt from any liability, right?
Sure. And that's one of the problems with the PREP Act is, you know, essentially the reason for the PREP Act and the reason for the emergency use authorization under Title 21, and it's also under Title 10 governing the troops. Section 1107 is what they violated when they illegally mandated anthrax vaccine. Section 1107A is what they added for emergency use authorized products, but then, you know, prudently published in the Federal Register that it would be illegal to mandate it. And so to your question, to your point about manufacturers not having any liability, that's the essence. The essence of the PREP Act gives covered entities, and that's basically anybody who is in the chain of events of ordering or giving emergency use authorized vaccines to people, making them, distributing them, prescribing them, mandating them, they're all exempt from liability. Zero liability unless there's willful misconduct. And essentially anybody who tries to prove willful misconduct is going to have a problem because the government basically says, yeah, we were in agreement. And so there is no willful misconduct by any of the tertiary players, the covered entities. They're all 100% immune. And instead, what people, the only recourse people have is to, if they have an injury, is to apply to the Countermeasures Injury Compensation Program, the CICP, which has a ridiculously low record of giving anybody any compensation. There's just a handful of cases that have even been heard or given any compensation. And the compensation does not begin to compensate people for loss of life, compensate people for lost earnings, for becoming disabled. So there's a lot of problems with that PREP Act law. which has essentially shifted all risk of these products onto the American people and the troops versus on the people that are pushing them, mandating them, prescribing them, making them.
Or getting rich from them. That's always the follow the money. Somebody was getting rich. Somebody was making a lot of money. And the government was like, hey, you have to take this or you are going to end up in the street and we don't care. And so this was so unprecedented to go across the entire country and say these large sectors. And I think that is probably the biggest pushback. A lot of times when things happen to the military, like anthrax, people are like, yeah, it's the military. Yeah, it's probably a really dangerous. But when they started pushing it across, you know, healthcare and any major manufacturer, OSHA laws, that sort of got Congress's attention, which I think is the reason that they rescinded it. But at the same time, there's still no consequence. There's no recourse if you're not feeling well or you're having heart issues or all these young people with cancer. There's a lot of emerging research about all the challenges with COVID-19 vaccines, especially heart issues in young folks. It's, you know, not 100% definitive yet, but it sure looks like that. There was a lot of the same issues with the anthrax vaccines, right?
Yeah, there were definitely a great deal of health problems related to the anthrax vaccine. Department of Defense has done everything possible to not study it. Interesting thing about the COVID vaccine and the latest National Defense Authorization Act for 2024 is they've ordered the Department of Defense to actually study it this time, not anthrax, but COVID, and make sure they study what kind of adverse events may have happened to our troops. If I'm not mistaken, it's Section 725 of the NDAA, whereas the other sections, 526 through 527 of the latest NDAA, also requires the Department of Defense to consider bringing people back into the military. Unfortunately, it doesn't order them to bring people back into the military, but it orders them to begin that process. And so that's good. Unfortunately, the process is very lethargic and unjust as a result. But you know, you made a comment about the overreach. They kind of like went too far this time. There's a couple of dimensions to that. Number one, they in comparison to anthrax, which only affected potentially 2.4 million soldiers. And, you know, the anthrax vaccine didn't end up impacting 2.4 million soldiers. Part of it was because the program was declared illegal. But you want to know what happened prior to it being declared illegal? The plant was shut down by the Food and Drug Administration for significant violations of current good manufacturing practices. So they were using a vaccine that came from a shutdown manufacturer and had been issued a notice of intent to revoke its license. And then later, the program was entirely found to be illegal. So that dimension was a very small subset of the American people that were impacted. So therefore, there's only a very small subset of the American people that understand the egregious injustice that occurred to those troops. But the other dimension is COVID. COVID impacted the entire country. COVID mandates were such an overreach, an unconstitutional overreach, according to the Supreme Court and many of the lower courts, that now they've kind of woken people up. And so hopefully people can empathize with what the troops were going through over 20 years ago with anthrax vaccine, because this time it basically haunted the entire American population and it didn't go well. And so that's a very important point as far as the overreach. But part of that overreach, some of the dysfunctional, behaviorally disappointing aspects of it is people were actually pitted against each other. You had the highest leaders of our nation basically saying that this was a pandemic of the unvaccinated, which scientifically has turned out to be patently false.
Yeah, just nonsense.
Yeah, and there's incredible quotes, which, you know, we talked prior to you airing this, that I'm publishing a book after many, many years, and I've tried to put some of the quotes together to document the parallels between anthrax vaccine and COVID vaccine, document some of the unhealthy characteristics of the way our government leaders have behaved. And I actually use that psychological lens because it's very important. I mean, again, safety is really of concern. Efficacy or lack thereof is really not in doubt. Illegality is pretty much for certain that the mandates were an overreach, but it's the behavioral dysfunctions and anomalies, the bad behavior by government officials that I think is one of the most interesting facets of this, that the way they behaved in pitting the American people against one another and creating this cultural divide, literally politicizing medicine, I think that's something that we should or will be discussing for decades and decades to come. I think the American people will ultimately want to look at what's happened, hopefully from a medical lens, scientific lens, hopefully from a legal lens, but from a psychological lens, it is absolutely fascinating how the American people were hoodwinked by leaders that basically tried to pit good people against one another. And that's very disappointing, but if you look at the quotes and if people just kind of think about what happened over the course of the past few years, they'll say, yeah, you know, it really was kind of some unhealthy behavior by our leaders. And hopefully they'll either be contrite about that in the future, or hopefully they'll be replaced by people that are willing to honestly analyze that and make sure that we get well as a nation. I also think it's fascinating the way some of the government leaders, and you and I also spoke pre-recording a little bit about the origins of COVID. It's absolutely fascinating that the anthrax vaccine experience was basically hampered by the anthrax letter attacks.
So let's go back. So I know all about the anthrax letter attacks, but I bet you a lot of our audience has either forgotten or just wasn't tracking that. So back in the first Gulf War, you know, in the early 90s, we had the Gulf War. We started the anthrax vaccination program. It continued on at starting then and going forward. Anybody's deployed to the Middle East, then everybody in the service. But then in 2001, right after 9/11, what happened?
So we were making great progress in getting the anthrax vaccine program shut down. I'd been contacted by Karl Rove in the White House. I was working regularly with Ross Perot, who's a great veteran philanthropist, tried to help resolve issues like the illegal use of the anthrax vaccine. He made sure that we briefed the offices of Senator Daschle, Gephardt, Senator Warner. We had basically got to a point where Karl Rove told me Department of Defense is reviewing the issue. When that review occurred, Undersecretaries of Defense made recommendations to Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld to effectively cancel, stop, halt the anthrax vaccine program, develop a new vaccine, which they basically had known they needed since 1985. And so we were making great progress as of the August 2001 timeframe. And then all of a sudden, you know, after Senator Daschle writes to Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld and questions the punishments meted out against the troops over the anthrax vaccine program, you know, in light of the pressure on the program and coincident with his own undersecretaries recommending that the program be canceled, suddenly there's anthrax letter attacks right after 9/11. And effectively what happened was an Army scientist who was responsible for the potency testing of the anthrax vaccine at Fort Detrick, it was his pet program. He ended up sending out anthrax letters, apparently, or somebody did. You know, I'm kind of agnostic as to who the actual perpetrator was, but the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Department of Justice took 10 years, but they put out findings that said that the motive of the anthrax letter attacks was to save the failing anthrax vaccine program. So whether or not they got the perpetrator right, I certainly think that they got the motive right. But they also hid information from the American people. They didn't tell the American people that Senator Daschle, who was the only entity who was attacked with those anthrax letters, who was actually questioning the vaccine program, they didn't tell the American people about that. They didn't tell how Senator Daschle and the attack on his office directly linked to the motive. Matter of fact, they went one step further and said nobody seemed to have any inkling as to why he might have been attacked, which is preposterous considering the motive was to save the failing anthrax vaccine program. And Senator Daschle, based on the encouragement from Ross Perot, was one of the key congressional allies who was questioning the anthrax vaccine program. So it's just amazing. You know, I guess we're lucky that the Department of Defense Justice and the FBI put out the findings and actually said that the motive was to try to save the failing anthrax vaccine program. But they didn't go far enough. Had they gone a little bit further and linked in the anthrax vaccine program and the termination of the legislative oversight that occurred as a result of the fear bomb of the anthrax letter attacks, we might have actually had some congressional officials that might have said, hey, so 10 years ago, we were reviewing the anthrax vaccine program. We found it to be highly problematic. The Department of Defense was about to stop it. And then suddenly there's anthrax letter attacks. They halt the review of the anthrax vaccine program. They accelerate it. And they actually start putting it in the strategic national stockpile for the United States civilian population as well. So right. It was dramatically successful. The FBI and the Department of Justice actually acknowledged that the attacks were amazingly successful. It led to the resurgence of the anthrax vaccine program when it was supposed to be stopped. It led to the passing of the Patriot Act, and it led to the passing of the PrEP Act and the emergency use authorizations and the liability-free drug scheme and cottage industry for the biodefense enterprise.
Whole thing. So it went from like a theoretical thing that somebody might be exposed to if they use biological weapons in a combat environment to, oh my gosh, the whole country's under attack. Obviously 9/11 happened. Then these anthrax letters showed up. I was actually at Walter Reed as a special agent, and we had received one in the mailroom, and we had to empty it out, you know, do all the craziness. And so I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy, because I wasn't trained in how to deal with a biological attack, you know, that's in the mailroom. But we had one at Walter Reed. We had it at a number of places. I followed that case pretty closely because of all the craziness that was happening and being personally involved in a small way. And I was like, oh, because it's very difficult to create anthrax that is aerosolized so that it spreads. It's not an easy thing. You can't do it at home. You need all sorts of specialized equipment, and you also have to have some to make more. And so when they finally identified that Fort Detrick scientist, that absolutely makes tons of sense. That was sort of his life work, and he didn't want it to go away. And he knew exactly the folks that were involved, like Senator Daschle, saying, hey, this guy, he's going to change his mind when he gets a letter full of anthrax and be potentially exposed or die. And people did die from these attacks.
That's right. There were a total of 5 Americans that were killed by the anthrax letter attacks. Amazingly, the anthrax letter attacks basically proved that simple antibiotics were fully effective in halting, curing the infection of the most lethal form of disease, the inhalation anthrax, which was the whole point of the anthrax vaccine. Anthrax vaccine essentially became not even required. And top government officials after the anthrax letter attacks and the awareness that simple antibiotics worked to cure people made that the go-to treatment. But you mentioned where you were when the anthrax letter attacks occurred and who you're working for. I had just delivered a citizen petition to the Food and Drug Administration challenging the improper licensure of anthrax vaccine, and a matter of fact, the lack of a licensure by the Food and Drug Administration. I was in Washington, D.C. I filed the citizen petition at FDA headquarters in Rockville, Maryland, and on my way out of town, I called my contacts in Senator Daschle's office to let them know the progress of our joint work at that time. They put me on hold. I was on my way to the airport. They came back on the phone and said that they had to evacuate the office due to an anthrax package being received. They hung up the phone. I went home. It was all over the news. So basically, you know, real time, I witnessed the anthrax letter attacks by Daschle's office. I knew that Daschle was at the you know, ground zero for questioning the anthrax vaccine program. And for some reason, you know, had the FBI taken that seriously and actually looked at the Fort Detrick scientists from day one, as I recommended, because I contacted the FBI, and the FBI was never in touch with me. They never responded to me actively. I was told I would be interviewed. They never interviewed me. They ignored the issue for 10 years and then basically said exactly what I was contending in my tips was correct, that the origin was from the inside of the Department of Army, which was the Office of Primary Responsibility for the anthrax vaccine program, by one of the key scientists, and the motive was to save the anthrax vaccine program. Had they listened, they could have wrapped that case up in a couple of weeks versus taking 10 years.
Right.
And so
like, who had motive? But, you know, we just saw two towers go down, the Pentagon was attacked, and then it was a couple months later, I guess it was December, January, if I recall properly, just a few months after those attacks, and this guy, whoever it was, but I think it's that scientist like we talked about, hey, I don't want my program to go away. This is a real risk, and I'm going to make sure that they know it's a real risk because I'm going to send it out. And they big story at the time, but obviously memories fade. People, you know, that lived through that, it's been 23 years, and, you know, it's a long time. That's absolutely shocking to me that they would continue something that doesn't work or doesn't work well and then repeat it again for COVID-19. Like the COVID-19 vaccine, like, hey, I was thinking, oh, this will work great. But as I started looking at the numbers and looking at the data, it doesn't stop it. Like you're still going to get sick. You're still going to spread it. It's not a vaccine like we think. And I think the real consequence is people are much more hesitant to get vaccines, the legitimate ones, measles, mumps, rubella, all these things that actually work, that stop the disease, like polio and things like that. Because they're like, oh, well, if they're lying about this, they're probably lying about that. And that's a real shame as well.
Yeah. And so the historical lens, I think, is really, really important. You know, not only the bioincident of the anthrax letter attacks, which stopped a lot of oversight mechanisms from actually doing the right thing. But then with COVID, another bioincident. And in the interim, because of the anthrax bioincident, they actually came up with a strategic plan, a national biodefense strategy that was published by the executive branch. But guess what? Because they effectively lied and covered up the bioincident nature of the COVID pandemic, they never implemented the National Biodefense Strategy. All of those stakeholders that should have come together, the Biodefense Steering Committee, everything that was recommended in my thesis that was mirrored in the Biodefense Strategy, none of that went into effect. And instead, it was a significantly siloed effort as far as the pandemic response. They covered up origins in no uncertain terms. And that's problematic. Unless we go back and analyze these kinds of bioincidents and keep them from happening in the future, whether it be U.S. involvement with funding gain-of-function research or other dangerous pandemic preparedness-type research, until we get a grip on this, it could happen again. And so from a strategic, long-term historical perspective, it's very important that hopefully our generation, but future generations understand what they have and have not done. And so, you know, I mentioned earlier that I did put forth a book which deals with a lot of lessons learned, tying the anthrax vaccine debacle to the COVID immunization fiascos. And, you know, basically it asks future Americans, if current leaders, next round of leaders don't fix these things, future American citizens are going to have to get a grip on this because, you know, frankly, the future, you know, well-being and health of our world, I think relies upon some good strategic resurveying of judgments and willingness to admit when mistakes have been made, willingness to make corrections when corrections are due.
Maybe Tom, what is the name of your book?
The book is called Unyielding. And it comes from kind of another side story in my military career where I was reprised against in some of my duties after I'd refused anthrax vaccine. I ended up ultimately getting into remotely piloted aircraft work. A lot of pilots in the military don't like doing drones. And so for me, it was an avenue to get back into operational work to serve my country. And so I did that for many, many years, basically a decade. In the midst of that service, unfortunately, I guess due to my unyielding nature, according to my chain of command, I got sideways with that chain of command because I had been trying to protect many of my troops that were subordinate to me that I was responsible for on a variety of different issues. And basically, I irritated my chain of command. And then at one point, there was a commander selection process. I was selected to be the commander through that meritorious selection process. The chain of command basically covered up my selection, selected a different person, and fired me. And so rather than put me in as the unit's commander, you know, which I would have been willing to do because, you know, I was working with a great bunch of American service members and performing, I think, a valuable mission. Rather than putting me in command of my unit, they fired me, and the top general basically said, your unyielding demands of the chain of command when you think they're doing something wrong will no longer be tolerated. So ever since then, my kids joked around with me about, hey, Dad, you shouldn't be unyielding. And so it became kind of a humorous family joke, but it applied to my military career because on all of these things, whether it was trying to get justice for being fired after, you know, being selected to be the next commander, or the anthrax vaccine thing, you know, it was basically my unyielding nature that led to all these problems. But the irony is that my education at the Air Force Academy, all of my professional military education while I was an active duty military member or guard or reserve, all of our ethics training tell us that we're supposed to be that unyielding person. And our chain of command are supposed to be those unyielding leaders that support us when we identify things that have gone wrong. So
we're about to go wrong. Yeah. You're supposed to be unyielding and doing the right thing.
Right. And so now today we have another 8,000 plus unyielding members of the military that stood up for their rights and were correct and challenged the military on religious, medical, or legal grounds about the patently illegal implementation of the COVID immunization mandates. And they were correct, right? They were unyielding. And what did they get? Just like me, they got essentially drummed out. I was able to fight back. The Department of Defense actually, at the inspector general, highest inspector general's level, determined that my case was an illegal reprisal. That led to my promotion in retirement to full colonel. So my case, although painful, is a case, an example where if you are unyielding, not only with standing up for your rights, but if you're also unyielding with the corrections process, you can find justice. But guess what? It shouldn't be so hard.
It should not
be. Our leaders should be the stewards of our service members' rights. Our leaders should be fixing these things for them rather than drumming people out of the military because they're uncomfortable about what these service members are unyieldingly bringing to the attention of the chain of command.
So, Tom, where can you find this book? I remember reading that it was going through a review process. Is it available yet?
It will be. The publisher, Skyhorse Publishing, should be putting it out sometime in the spring. So unyielding.org is my website. There's a brief glimpse of a proposed cover for the book, but ultimately the publisher will be putting something out in the very near future.
Fantastic. So go to hopingforjustice.org or unyielding and go check it out when it comes out. We'll definitely have a link to it and a link to the website. So if you're driving or you're not at home or you don't have your computer in front of you and you're like, oh, I want to remember this website, we will put it in the show notes. Just go look at it. You'll be able to click on it and go check out Hoping for Justice or the other website, which is super easy to get to. It's lots of information. If you are affected by the COVID-19 vaccine or the anthrax vaccine, it's a fantastic resource to go check everything out. Hey, this is what I need to do. This is how to do it. Here's some other case studies, lots of documents, lots of research. So if you want to find out more, this is a great place to go check out with Colonel Tom Buzz Remfer's site. So Tom, we've talked about a lot of things, but I'm sure there's things that I've missed or that I meant to talk about, but didn't. What should we have talked about, but we haven't yet?
Retired members, just like active members, Guard or Reserve, are all required to give a disclaimer that their views do not necessarily represent that of the Department of Defense, or in my case, the Air Force at this time. Hopefully they will down the road. So I wanted to offer up the disclaimer. I also want to provide a really important caveat because over the years, I've basically beat this drum with all of these legal arguments that were all originated based on the intellectual prowess of one of my colleagues who subsequently passed away. His name, Lieutenant Colonel Russ Dingell. All of my efforts are not only a tribute to him, but hopefully he'd be proud of us for standing up for the troops and trying to continue to get records corrected, not only for the previous disaster with anthrax vaccine, but also the COVID inoculation disaster as well. I think he'd be proud of us. And so my efforts, the book, is a tribute to him. And basically all of the research that he generated, and then I would kind of take it to Capitol Hill, take it to the media, take it to lawmakers, and beat the drum. But basically, Russ was responsible for all of it. He was the intellectual heavyweight. All profits from the book will go to his family.
So I have one last question that you just triggered in my mind. Is there any current political activists, or not activists, advocates in Congress, in the House or the Senate, that are helping to push this, like Senator Daschle was?
Yeah, so I would say that almost the entire legislative force seems to be AWOL on actually correcting records. There have been yeoman's work by many individual senators and representatives, but they can only do so much. So, you know, Senator Cruz trying to get records corrected, Senator Johnson definitely supporting getting records corrected, Senator Paul calling out the lab leak deceptions to the American people, which go to the core of the ridiculousness of the pandemic originating from this dangerous research. In the House, Representative Massey, there's many more, but unfortunately, you got to have a quorum. And for some reason, the vast majority of elected representatives are looking the other way. And I think that there's probably a lot of disincentive for them to call it illegal, to call out the lab leak. It's definitely challenging the cottage industry, which gives many of them a great deal of their campaign donations. It's really troubling why there is not a consensus in the House and the Senate to do the right thing. And that right thing is unilateral across-the-board correction of military records for both the anthrax vaccine and the COVID cohorts.
So if people want to get involved and they say, hey, you know what, this is a bunch of crap. Maybe it didn't affect me personally, but hey, I want to reach out to my congressional or presidential or executive or legislative. How do they get involved? What's the best way for somebody that says, hey, I want to do something about this, because this is a bunch of malarkey?
Yeah, and it's kind of frustrating. In comparison to our anthrax vaccine era, we had great support from lawmakers, not only Senator Daschle, Representative Gephardt, but also Senator Blumenthal in my then home state of Connecticut, Representative Shays, Simmons, Johnson, Senator Dodd. Great deal of congressional support. We also had a great deal of media support, mainstream media. I mean, I did a lot of interviews from, you know, CNN to CBS to ABC to Fox, you know, PBS did a great deal of interviews. They were very interested in trying to fix the wrongs. And that's why we made major progress until the anthrax litter attacks, where everybody was basically diverted and you know, deceived over the fear bomb. And so today, service members have a more of a struggle because most elected leaders are looking the other way. Most of the mainstream media is looking the other way. And everybody kind of wants to not talk about it and move on at this point. A matter of fact, the executive order canceling the mandates actually said moving beyond the federal mandates. They just want to move on. They don't want to talk about all the damage that they did. I think it's important to fix the damage in order to reinstill the trust of the American people. What do they do? Take a copy of my bill on the homepage of the website and send it to your elected representatives. And they, if they want, they can parse out the anthrax vaccine corrections and just correct the stuff for the COVID folks. And then maybe hopefully someday they'll do the right thing for the historic anthrax vaccine illegalities and injustices. But number one, they need to fix those COVID injustices and contact your elected representatives, and hopefully the momentum's changing. Hopefully we get a new administration. Hopefully the current administration understands the shift in momentum and maybe they do the right thing. I would applaud that. It's never too late to do the right thing. But if they don't, new elected leaders should, and I believe will.
Absolutely. So go contact your elected leaders. There's easy ways to get in touch with them. Go look at the website and pull the draft legislation, or just reach out and talk to your elected folks. Every time that an elected person receives a letter or something from their constituent, they do pay attention, especially if they get a lot of them and people are paying attention to an issue. It's amazing how just a few folks can have such an outsized impact. less than like 1% of people actually contact their legislators about things. So they get a lot of mail about something pretty consistently. All of a sudden, it's something on their radar. So that's what we need to do everywhere for these types of issues. COVID-19 is the most pressing because it's the most current, but the anthrax stuff was so outrageous. And so was COVID-19. But it's amazing how many people had such significant consequences, and that sort of faded from memory, but they're still dealing with these consequences where they just weren't following the law. And people that said, hey, I'm not going to do this because I'm concerned about X, Y, and Z. I have religious concerns. I have whatever concerns. They didn't care. And we thought they would. And most people were like, oh, that's legitimate. They didn't care. Not at all. So hopefully at some point we'll get it fixed, but you can have a part in this. Reach out, talk to people, but most importantly, go to hopingforjustice.org and get the material so you understand the issue. Now, that's the first step, and the more people that are aware of it can actually go and do something. We've been talking with Colonel Tom Buzz Rempfer. That was his call sign, Buzz. I think Unyielding is his probably new call sign, at least with his family. Colonel Rempfer, thank you so much for joining us on Coming Home Well and for sharing something that I don't think gets nearly as much attention as it should or eventually will. I know this is the second time we've had you on because it's such an important issue. And frankly, there's been a lot of updates, especially with the COVID-19 stuff. So thank you again for sharing all of this and keeping it at the forefront of people's minds.
Thank you, Tyler, for bringing visibility on it and making sure people don't forget.
Absolutely. Thank you. And everybody, if you want to go find out more, we're going to put all the websites and everything in the show notes so you don't have to write it down. But if you are sitting at your computer and want to go check on it, it is hoping4justice.org. And it'll take you right there. It's a well-designed website. And you can always reach out to Colonel Rempfer if you have any questions or concerns. His contact information and everything else is on the website. Thank you again for joining us at Coming Home Well.
Thanks for joining us this week on Coming Home Well with Dr. Tyler Pieron. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and a review. Thanks again. And until all are home and all are well, this is Coming Home Well.